Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. This podcast is for you if you have an insane drive to find the truth of things. It's not the good answers that we seek, but the good questions. I interview a range of different guests from many different fields, all with the intention to uncover the simple truths that are hidden in plain sight. Most people don't want to go there. I go there. My guests go there, and you benefit. Please let me know if you enjoy these episodes, and as always, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Crazy Wisdom Podcast. My guest today is Jonas Lammas. He is a partner at Metacake and a JPEG purveyor of many different JPEGs and NFTs. And so welcome to the show.
A buyer and seller of rare JPEGs.
And I see in the background before we started recording, you turned on your, I'll let you explain it, your IBM something. What is the IBM in the background?
Sure. So over my right shoulder over here is a vintage IBM PC Junior from the early 80s, probably 1982, which has been painted a lovely pink and blue by my long departed father, who was an artist. He was very he became really well known in the art community in the kind of late 1960s for the things over my left shoulder, for these plexiglass cubes. He was widely collected around this concept of like cubes within cubes within cubes, different colors. Was well known in the New York art scene. After a while, he kind of just burned out on physical sculpture at about the same time when young Jonas convinced mom and dad to buy a computer back in the early 80s. And so they bought these IBM, they bought an IBM PC Junior. And I learned how to write some basic code with it back in the day when I was really young. And one of the things you could do is you could, because it had a graphics card in it, one of the early color graphics, you know, devices, I was able to draw things like a circle or a square. And I showed this to my dad, and then he instantly got hooked and started doing kind of this algorithmic computer art in the early 80s. And so what you're seeing here is one of his programs running from around 1985. When he created these things. Now, he never really got nearly the notoriety for his computer art that he got for his physical art, but nevertheless, it's a legacy of the Lammas family, and probably explains why I like to collect JPEGs these days.
So. Interesting, and there's so many synchronicities with my own life right now. I'm in Buenos Aires, and I converted an Airbnb into my long term apartment down here. And I convinced my friend, who's a 3D graphics programmer, and he's rented the Airbnb above me, and he's showing me how to use AI to code. And since he's in 3D programming, 3D graphics programming, he's been showing me all the art stuff that he's making, and he would be totally tripped out by what is going on in the background of your screen right now. So that IBM program, 1980s, you learned BASIC in order to do it. How did you learn BASIC when you were a young kid?
Well, I just watched YouTube. No, I'm kidding. We didn't have YouTube in the 1980s. Basically, I think it was programming manuals. You know, they're somewhere in my garage is the original binders that came with the DOS cartridge. There's an IBM BASIC cartridge that plugs into that thing. You know, they just had examples, and you just kind of read the examples. I think there were some magazines back in the day, like PC Mag or things like that, probably stuff your dad wrote for back in the day, you know, that had programs in the back of them, and you could copy those in and see if they ran and all that good stuff.
And do you mean that they had disks or anything like that? Or
even in the day, it was just printed, you know, it was a printed program on a page that you would... that you'd type into your computer. Certainly by the late, you know, this is a floppy disk, 5 1/4 sticking in that thing, which I don't really remember if they distributed those in magazines. Probably in the 90s, they kind of went to Probably not till the CD came out when they really started distributing programs like AOL and things like that in the 90s. Yeah, it was pretty figure it out yourself. Go to the library, look up in the card catalog for a computer programming book, go to the stacks, find the book, check it out, bring it home,
And
recreate the programs.
do you remember being frustrated by the process? What was it something that you got into? Do you still code today?
I do not still code today, if I can help it. I think it was just really quite a amazing opportunity to have a device like a computer to be able to create things that you were imagining. It still is for developers. It's still an amazing experience, I think, when you create something in your mind and you turn it into something that works, and then you can share it with other people. I love that whole mind frame. For me, I never went really deep on programming like others did. My path went more towards kind of thinking about business and strategy and things like that throughout my career.
And so how did you get into NFTs, and what's the current state of NFTs that is on your mind? What's the what is what's going on that you've found to be really interesting the last few months or so?
So I was, kind of exposed to crypto in the kind of around 2013, 2014, working in San Francisco. I think that's where we met, when I was working at Rally. And a little company called Coinbase had just moved in down the street there on Second Street, I think it was, or Third Street. And bought my first Bitcoin, I think, on Coinbase around that time. Really didn't pay much attention to the crypto scene at that phase because we were doing lots of other interesting things. I was working for a company that actually ended up getting acquired in kind of late 2016, and that's when I kind of poked my head up to see what did I miss over the last 3 or 4 years of building. And it turned out that I kind of missed the whole early Ethereum ecosystem, which I found totally fascinating when I started reading the white papers. And then I started reading, other white papers about these other networks, like Tezos, for example, was a one that I really latched onto. I thought the whole innovation with delegated proof of stake that Tezos was bringing to the marketplace, around how consensus was generated, was really fascinating. And so the next summer, 2017, was the summer, the ICO summer, as they called it. And so I kind of played a lot in the ICO summer and bought a bunch of stuff and got really deep into Tezos. And in 2018, when Tezos launched, I launched a Baker, which is what they call the validator ecosystem in Tezos. And my Baker rapidly grew to become the largest Baker in the ecosystem. I had done some good marketing around that, I guess, beforehand. And so that really got me in deep down the crypto rabbit hole. By 2020, I was exploring other chains and learning a lot about Ethereum as well. And I happened to be on a panel where we were talking about DAOs. I had co-founded a DAO in the Tezos ecosystem that was kind of in the DeFi space. And this was in the height of COVID, right? So we were all sitting in front of our computers, and I was on a panel with other DAO creators. And one of those DAO creators was a woman, Priyanka Desai, who was a co-founder of Flamingo DAO. And the Lao, and she was talking about all these cool art collecting DAOs that they were building on the Ethereum ecosystem, under Tribute Labs, which was her company. And I was like, oh, I need to get involved in that, whatever they're doing over there. And so, as luck would have it, they had an open enrollment to join Flamingo DAO when they were just getting it started. And so I put down my ETH and the rest is history. That's just really been, since 2020, that's been by far the most rewarding and, fun experience, I think, probably of my entire career, is being a part of the crew at Flamingo Dow.
Wow. What about it? What about it is so attractive? And is it the people you've met or is it the art?
Definitely it's the community, it's the people, the finding your kind, people who are really into digital art and are really into futurism and thinking about where the world's going, all coming together in a group of, I think there's probably 50 or 60 members of Flamingo Dow, and just having this kind of super smart, like-minded mindset all aligned to try and figure out where the future's going has just been really, really interesting and rewarding. Along the way, we've collected a lot of great art, which has been fantastic. But just the whole process has been really, really amazing.
And so what has the effect of AI been on that generation process, or like what, because I mean digital art, it's the digital art world must have changed significantly since Midjourney and DALL-E 3 have come out. What has been the effect at all, and like, what are the plans to integrate AI into Flamingo?
Great question. In the early days of Flamingo, we launched in September or October of 2020. The very first thing that we went out collecting at scale was CryptoPunks. The CryptoPunk, that was a 10,000 piece, that is a 10,000 piece collection of on-chain assets that are all unique, and we kind of were able to c buy several hundred of them at OTC, and we got this first collection going. And then shortly after CryptoPunks came out, or after we collected them, they came out back way back in 2017. This platform called ArtBlocks launched, and ArtBlocks was building on the CryptoPunk ethos, on-chain generative art that had provenance on Ethereum, collection sizes of a couple hundred to 1,000, in some cases 2,000, and using this motif much like CryptoPunks of one of one of X. They're all part of the same collection, but they're all different within that collection. And so that for the inside Flamingo, that model resonated really strongly with the group. So we went really deep early on in the ArtBlocks world, collecting squiggles, for example. The Chromie squiggles, one of our favorites. And then all of the other launches that kind of happened, the Ringers and Fidenzas are some of the ones that people know the best. But we really enjoyed that. That then evolved to thinking about the JPEG space in general, right? So far we were mainly focused on programmatic art, sort of like what I've got over my shoulder here from my dad, but the modern version of that. Then we started thinking about kind of one of one art that people were creating on Super Rare, for example, X Copy, things like that. And we kind of started picking up a lot of what we think are legendary one of one artists, and that kind of that melange of on-chain generative plus one of one art kind of carried through 2021 and into 2022. And then we kind of started to see the emergence of AI art, right? And that's where we are here now in 2023 and into 2024, where AI art is becoming really significant. And for us at Flamingo, we try to think of ourselves as being early on trends. And so we've been paying attention to AI art since, since the first pieces started to emerge. The Bato program has been one that we've been playing with for since it first launched, acquiring Bato art. I don't know if you know about that one at
No.
all.
What's Bada?
So Bato is a really interesting model where the algorithm would generate a piece of AI art, and the Botto community would then vote it up or down,
Oh,
essentially.
cool.
And they would kind of have these competitions of pieces against each other, and you'd have Botto tokens to stake to do your voting. And ultimately, once a period, I think once a week, one piece would emerge as being the winning AI generated artwork on Botto, and then that piece would get auctioned off on Super Rare.
Wow.
So that's been a fun program. They were really early in this, probably. They've been probably doing that for almost 2 years now, I bet.
Wow. And
And more recently, yeah, go ahead.
so is that on the Ethereum chain or what chain are
Yeah.
they on? Okay, yeah.
Everything we'll talk about for the most part is on Ethereum, although there's some really interesting Bitcoin stuff happening
Yes, the
just
ordinals are
now
out
as
there.
well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the AI space has been really cool. In 2022, another DAO called Fellowship started focusing on AI art as a real central thesis for their focus. They started in photography, and then they brought out what they were calling post photography, right? Which was AI art being applied to photographic type of elements. And that really interested us. And so we started collecting post photography works. There was one of the early artists in that space is a guy by name Rupe Reinisto, I think. He's out of Northern Europe, Finland, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. And he had this amazing collection called Life in West America. So we collected Liwa, and then we've just been going really deep on the AI space. More recently, it's even evolved now into AI video on chain. The leading player there is, or at least we think that one of the top artists in that space is a group called Nice Aunties. And their work has just been fantastic, and we've collected several dozen of their pieces as well. So yeah, look, we love what's happening in the AI space as well, and it just falls into the overall Flamingo thesis.
Yeah, this is really cool. So the Batto, excuse me if I mispronounced that. That seems like it's really interesting because it's got voting, it's got AI generation, it's programmatic. So it's just creating art pieces and then people are voting on it. How is that changing the economics of those pieces? Are some pieces really going through the roof and kind of creating large amount of value, or is it really small niche community still?
The model that they created, which was very clever, is that the system generates a lot of works that are then played against each other before the final piece is determined, and then only that final piece is minted. So all of the other stuff is just kind of lost, if you will. And so they then constrain their supply based on a periodic minting of the favorite piece from the community, if you will.
Interesting. Yep.
Yeah. Now, as far as how those pieces have performed, I really don't have a clue, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
One of the things that Flamingo is particularly poor at is exiting our positions. We really only acquire stuff. We almost never sell anything.
And now,
So.
is the NFT market returning to not to the 2021 levels, but like, is it returning as a place that people are sort of investing in?
I don't know about that. It's a really crypto in general is facing a really interesting challenge right now, which is that I think the vision that everyone has had in this space about the importance of it, the decentralized, emancipated, control over self, control over assets, has that brought so many people into it has not turned into a mainstream concept, right? And therefore, the masses have not come to crypto that I think many of us anticipated in 2017, 2018, 2019, and whatnot. And so it feels still like we're a very small community of people. And as a result, now with the Bitcoin ETF, for example, like are it is the traditional finance going to route everybody around these cool things that we've created, or will people start with something like a Bitcoin ETF and then they'll go deeper down the rabbit hole and eventually own a squiggle? I have no idea. But it'll be interesting to see how that evolves.
And then what do you see? So one of the main cool use cases that I've been thinking about NFTs, and like I still think they're going to be really important for this, is as a sort of gateway mechanism into an application or some sort of like reward for doing things inside of video games. Have you ever heard of a my what I have this crazy story that I won't go into how I met this guy, but he was a programmer and he was really well, he's a weed grower, but he was also a programmer in the mountains of California, and but he only did his programming as a hobby, and so what he loved was what was it? Mission to Mars. Which have you heard of Mission to Mars? Have you heard of that?
No.
No. So Mission to Mars is basically like a computer game that's run on NFTs that people invest in. And it's got this crazy mechanics. I never actually went into it, but it was built off of it was built off of Wax. Wax, I believe, is an Ethereum chain. Have you heard of any of this stuff?
No, but I'm sure it's there. There's so much depth, you know.
So what do you think about it? And so the key thing that it ran into was, or that it was run on, was essentially NFTs for all these different things. And it was a totally wild video games. I haven't played video games in a long time, but it reminded me of games in the 90s and the 2000s that were these world building games that were, and it felt like the real gaming meets NFTs kind of thing. And so what do you think about NFTs? What do you think about gaming? What do you think is the future of NFTs in the next 1 to 2 years?
So this is a fascinating area. It's one of the areas that this kind of lab that I'm working on with Medicake, my partner and I, Alex and I, are spending a lot of time looking at the 3D space. And we think that, you know, what Apple's doing with the Vision Pro, for example, and certainly what Meta's done with their headsets, it's inevitable in our mind that 3D creations are going to become more and more important to humanity. That when Zuckerberg was talking with Lex on the podcast a couple months ago, he made a comment, something along the lines of like, he believes, Zuck believes by 2030, there will be, you'll walk into a room and there will be more 3D digital creations in that room than there will be physical items in that room.
And these
Right.
are totally
So,
virtual, basically. Basically, you in order to see them, you would have a headset on.
you would have, you'll have your Ray-Ban sunglasses on, or you know, the technology will continue to miniaturize and become more pervasive. I personally believe that Apple's on that path as well, and that like our iPhones are going to turn into things that are lightly strapped to our face that will be kind of worn a lot of the time when we're in trying to meld the mixed world together, you know. So clearly the 3D assets, be they for games that are playing on your console, be they for things in the metaverse, the open metaverse, or be they things that more and more are going to emerge as augmented reality kinds of experiences, are really important in my book. And it's only a matter of time before everyone is interacting with 3D assets all the time, as I see it. And so I think that then there's the interesting question of, will the 3D assets that we have around us in the future be things that are controlled by us? Will they be self-sovereign? Do we own them, right? Or are they going to be leased to us by some mega corporation or some game company that we don't really own and we can't really transfer from one place to another without their permission, right? And this is again the underlying argument of crypto as well. Are you going to be able to have self-sovereignty around the things that you want to own and control, or are the corporations going to own those things? And I think this is going to be a really important question because so much of life, I think, is going to move to the digital over the next 100 years, and probably over the next 20 years. We're at a tipping point here where we need to try and get the crypto ethos into the 3D asset space. And Alex and I are pursuing that with one of our projects called PlayLayer, which is basically a tool for showcasing your creations, your 3D creations, and a place where you can, create a showcase for them. You can manage them. You can share them with friends. And we've built into it a collectability feature as well, which we're testing. So that ultimately there can be a crypto backbone underneath all of it, although we're not really focused on that quite yet.
That's very cool. What you said, there's a lot of things that I would love to talk about. The 3D assets, from what I have been seeing with AI, it has been crazy the way that it can generate things. And that mixed with the 3D assets that you were talking about feels like it's going to enter a world of, particularly with any sort of interface mechanism that changes the way that we view the world, is going to lead to some pretty crazy, trippy, psychedelic worlds. Like the idea that you can sort of just speak with a computer and that computer can go generate a bunch of these visuals is going to be really, really interesting. Where do you see that world going? Like,
100%, 100%.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tool called Luma. Luma AI is the name of the company, and they recently released a text to 3D
Wow.
tool, much like much like Midjourney, but for 3D assets. And so you can say, give me a I'm looking at one right now, a cute low poly ice penguin for a video game, right? And a minute later, you'll have a 3D image, or you'll have a 3D asset that you can download as a USDZ. And in our case, you can put that into PlayLayer, which is the name of our app, and then you can have your penguins standing here on your desk next to you if you want to, right? So yeah, it's really interesting. It's really important where this is all going.
Can you go back to that file, USZ, you said?
So there are the kind of there are a bunch of different file formats, right, for the 3D space. The ones that we're focused on, the kind of the original AR 3D asset file is called a GLB,
Okay.
dot GLB. But there's a new consortium which Apple is driving along with a bunch of other gamer vendors that is creating a more rich 3D format, and that is called USDZ, dot USDZ. And so more and more you're seeing most of the 3D assets that are being generated have a dot USDZ download capability, and that's what we're using with PlayLayer.
That's cool. But you're also connecting that with the blockchain. How will the blockchain, or how does the blockchain interact, or how does the Ethereum blockchain or any other blockchain interact with these specific files? Like, what is the intersection between the blockchain and this 3D world that you're talking about, if any?
Right, so we have not hooked any of that up yet from a blockchain perspective, but I think where this needs to go, let's say for example, we are talking about digital fashion, and I don't know how much you've looked into this space, but there are a lot of cool new vendors who are creating digital clothing that can be superimposed on a person. And this is kind of a number of fashion vendors are doing this already. You can get your Gucci digital handbag, for example, or you can have a cool dress, you know, that is superimposed on you for your Instagram pictures. But where this is going is, you know, a world where if everybody's wearing headsets around, then you're going to be able to kind of dial on what fashion you want to be wearing on a certain day. And as you're walking around with your digital fashion on, other people will see it. Right? You following me with that? And the question then is that the pants and jacket that you're wearing, do you want to be able to own that? Do you want to be able to prove that they were from a certain vendor? And do you want to be able to resell them to somebody else someday? And if you want to have those functionalities, then there needs to be something underlying it, like a blockchain, so that you can prove ownership, you can prove provenance, and you can trade it.
That's
And there, yeah.
go for it. Keep on going. That's wild.
Now, and you want, and because it, just like the real world, if you go to my closet in my bedroom, I've got, you know, 30 different brands of clothing in there, and I bought them from 30 different stores, and no one centrally controls that and says, I can't wear that today, or I can't resell that item, or I can't give it to Goodwill, right? The same thing is going to be important in the digital world.
And this is making me think about the connection back to the 3D world, the physical world, because there's also, lying in wait somewhere in the known, in the unknown future, the 3D printing is going to come back. And the 3D printing is going to be related to, you were talking about the specific file formats for the 3D objects. And then there's the other one, I think it's STL that gets it into the 3D printer and such. What do you think is going to be the relationship between the 3D world and this world that you're talking about? Because then I can see a clear thing of being, owning that piece of digital art and then being like, oh, I want to wear this to some sort of event where there's no electronics allowed, and I want to get that same thing but in the physical version. What's your take on that world?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point as well. I do like the open source model that has come out of 3D printing quite a bit. You know, the fact that people are sharing all these great files and being able to generate things, and there's not really a sense of like IP restrictions around it that much, which is really important. One of the things that we've seen in the crypto space is that some innovative brands have started adding like an NFT tag to physical
Oh,
items.
cool.
Like my friend G Money, he has a brand called 9DCC, which is kind of a boutique fashion brand, and he puts a little tag, it's a Bluetooth tag in the fashion item, like in the ball cap or in the t-shirt, so that you can, when you're wearing that ball cap, someone else can come up to it and can tap the hat, and they can collect a NFT that shows the interaction that happened between the owner of the hat and the person, where they met, what time they met, so forth and so on. And for the owner of that cap, they can prove that it's a authentic cap because of the provenance associated with the NFT device that's inside of it, right? So you're seeing that kind of provenance tracking happening in the art world a little bit. There's some traditional artists who are embedding NFT devices into their paintings, for example. You're seeing it with some fashion now. That could relate to the 3D world in the future, the 3D printed world in the future.
There is, and what about physical art? Are you involved with any projects that are doing the same thing but for physical art places or like place art galleries that are still doing the NFT that are, is there any sort of, because I know in 2021 there's a lot of that. What is still left over from that?
It's a good question. I think by and large, the primary trend that I've seen in the NFT physical art space is that a lot of artists are interested in providing their NFT collectors with a physical version of the art that they collected. Right. And so certainly in the kind of in the 2D like art block space, for example, a lot of the art that is created as an NFT in art blocks also turns into a physical print. You know, owning a physical Fidenza, for example, and also owning the NFT is extra special, if you will, because you can own the NFT, but then you can also have the one and only print of that NFT signed by Tyler Hobbs on your wall, right? And so that's a trend that's definitely happening in the space. I'm not aware all that much of embedded tracking, except in the fringe areas so far.
And we'd talked about Bitcoin and some of the, and I imagine that you were talking about the ordinals that currently is happening right now. What's your take on ordinals? Actually, was it ordinals? Yeah, no, it's ordinals. I had Corey, the guy on the show, the Corey who started the Bitcoin ordinals on the show a long time ago, right before that really went to town. But I haven't actually kept up with it. Although I do know that the hardcore Bitcoiners are all really angry at the ordinals for doing whatever they're doing. What's your take on this general thing going on now?
Yeah, I love the ordinals projects that are emerging, or some of them at least are really fascinating. I think that like the Wizards project, Taproot Wizards, is just, you know, has been really a genius way to get to make Bitcoin fun again, as they say, I think. And their Taproot Wizard team, led by the artist Far, whose work I love on Ethereum, is now launching a new project called Quantum Cats. They just announced it earlier this week on Ordinals, and I think that project probably is going to be quite successful and begin to create their own legends in the art world on Bitcoin, just like CryptoPunks and other things have done on Ethereum over time. So yeah, so I like what's happening in the ordinal space. I do think that Ethereum is the by far the best platform for long-term, you know, art appreciation. But there's no reason not to enjoy the memes and the lols on Bitcoin as well.
I almost want to go back to the G Money 90C guy because that sounds really interesting. And the fact that he put the Bluetooth inside his clothing and then connects it to, do you know the technical details of, did he hire an engineer to do that? Is he doing that in-house? Would he be a good person to bring on the show?
I'm sure G would love to talk to you about it. There's been a long-standing tool in the Ethereum space called the PoAP. Have you ever heard of a PoAP?
No.
So a PoAP, that stands for a proof of authentication protocol, I think. Proof of activity. Oh no, sorry. Proof of attendance protocol. The A stands for attendance. Proof of attendance protocol. And so what the PoAP model did was, if you went to a Bitcoin, if you went to an Ethereum conference, if you went to NFT NYC, the PoAP team would be there with a QR code. And if you scanned the QR code when you were in the main hall, you would get an NFT delivered to your wallet. That was a commemorative item for your attendance of that event, right? And so the PoAP model has been around probably since 2021, and lots of people, they'll do a Twitter space, and talking about a project, and then they'll have a PoApp code that you can type into the PoApp app, and you can claim the collectible for that, right? Those are
Interesting.
all layer two collectibles. They're on Polygon. And so G Money took that PoApp technology and put it into his app so that you could trigger the same kind of interaction when you tapped the Bluetooth device that was in his hat. It would trigger his app, which would then had an API to the PoApp app that would then generate a commemorative a commemorative NFT on Polygon that's specifically tied to that interaction around that hat, if you
Interesting.
will.
This is giving me a lot of ideas because I've been trying to think of this specific problem that people are listening to the show, but I don't know who they are. And I've been trying to figure out like what are the ways that I can actually communicate with them and find out who they are, find out who's listening to this thing, and maybe doing something like that of offering some sort of thing that then could put me into touch with them. I think that's a really good idea. What do you think of that?
100%. It's easy to do. You would not be pioneering anything there because a lot of podcasts and live events and recorded events are like, and in fact, I don't know if your audience has the PoApp app or not. That's probably one of the interesting challenges. But for in the crypto community, most of us already have the PoApp app. And so when someone says to claim your collectible for this conversation, just go to the PoApp app and type in, whatever the keyword is for today's conversation, and you can claim it for a certain amount of time, or a certain number are available, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna do like one thing. So try to get one person to talk with me from the show, basically. And maybe it's like actually winning an interview on the show. I think that's a cool idea.
Yeah, cool. That'd be awesome.
Okay, we got about 5, 10 minutes left. Well, what's your take? Because my head has been so focused on AI for the past 9 months, year, that it's just been just totally sucked in. And you've been explaining a world to me, which is pretty new, that I haven't paid attention to for a couple of years. And so what's your take on where we are in AI? What are you most excited about in AI? And how is it going to help you unlock things in your world that you're working on?
Yeah, great. I'm in the camp that says that kind of the generative AI functionality that we're seeing emerge now is as foundational a change to humanity as any other technology revolution of the most important level that's happened, as fire, as the wheel, as the internet, as the personal computer, like. AI is going to change us so deeply over the next 20, 30, 50 years that it's, who knows how recognizable humanity 2.0 that we're in right now is going to be when we get to humanity 3.0. Of course, I've always been kind of in the techno optimist futurist camp. So obviously there's lots of negative outcomes that we need to be worried about as well. But from a positive EAC, as they say, optimist perspective, I think it's going to be an amazing transformation over the coming decades. Having said that, I'm sure we're overhyped right now. It's the old things tech tend to be overhyped in the near term and underhyped in the long term. So that's where we are. In Medicake, we've been building a product in the AI space as well as the kind of the 3D asset space that I was telling you about. We have a product that we have in beta right now called Storybank. You can check that out at storybank.ai. And it's something that has been very personal for me. I lost my mom during kind of right at the end of COVID, and I realized that I had failed to really record the essence of who my mom was. I never stuck the camera in front of her and had her tell all her stories from when she was growing up in Brooklyn back in the day, or how she met dad, or the whole art experience that they had in the 50s and 60s. Like, I didn't, I never realized I needed to record those things until it was too late. And so as I was playing with ChatGPT, I started testing it on myself. Could I get ChatGPT to record my stories? Right? Could I give it a prompt that would have it interview me? And then could it take that interview, that back and forth dialogue that we would have around a topic that I wanted to tell a memory of? Could it take that interview and then turn it into a first person narrative story, like a chapter in a book, or a 300 word essay about my first child's birth, or about my 1976 Ford LTD that my parents gave me as my first car, or about my childhood friends growing up, or about my time in college, or our trip to Australia, or whatever. Could I get it to start to become my biographer, if you will, right? And so I started testing that on ChatGPT, and the results were really pretty fantastic, I thought. And so I brought that to my partner Alex, and we started building Storybank as a tool to programmatically let people share their memories through conversational AI and have those memories then turned into a storybook, if you will, of memories. And that is a modern day version of a number of tools that are already out in the marketplace. There's a company called Storyworth, for example, that's been around over a decade, and they've become really well known for capturing grandma and grandpa's story, right? They send an email to grandpa once a week for the course of a year, and grandpa answers the question, and it comes back in and gets turned into a picture book and or like a memory book that then
Yeah.
is put on the shelf, right?
So cool.
And so we were like, let's bring that to the 21st century and create a way that instead of you having to type in what your specific answer is to that one question, let's use AI to interview you, question by question to really pull out the essence of what was important to you about that event and to be able to go down its own paths to hone in on the essence of it. And then let's pull that all together into a digital output for you. And that was kind of, so we put that together into Storybank. We have an app for it in the Apple App Store. We have a website for it. And then we really got excited because what we realized is that the conversation that I've had with Storybank over the 40 or so stories that I've told it all serves as a training corpus for a language model that represents me, right? That knows what I know, right? And so now we've taken that next step and we've created a digital twin of myself, and it knows a fair amount about my life now. And you can actually go to storybank.ai and you can try it out yourself. You can chat with me as a digital twin, and all it cloned my voice, so it'll be me talking to you about any questions that you have of me about my life, for example. And so let me just wrap this all up here and say that, like, I know this is so, this is probably offensive to lots of people, the thought that you could have a digital version of yourself that out could outlive you and it could have your memories, right? But that's coming. But you may find that totally offensive. You don't have to do it yourself, but there's going to be a lot of people in the future who are going to do this. And that digital twin of me is going to meld into that 3D augmented reality world in the next decade. And there's going to be a digital Jonas walking around someday in the distant future that's going to know a lot of what I know, and it's going to interact with my future generations of people who want to talk to me, assuming they do, and Who knows when we turn on AGI, how smart that thing is going to be in the future. So I kind of think of this as a path to digital immortality, kind of
Wow.
where we're going. But those are probably words that should not be spoken too broadly yet, for society. But it's where it's all going over the next couple decades.
And it's really interesting, and I'll leave this leave we'll leave it with this, is that it's like I from the sense, I don't get the sense that these LLMs are conscious. I think they're really intelligent, but they're also sort of alien intelligence. And it feels like what you just said is going to be a agent that, well, actually, it's a good question. We should maybe do another one on this. Is like, will that agent have the same will as us, or will it have a different will that it makes up on its own? And that autonomy question, because it doesn't, I haven't seen anything yet that makes me think that that any LLM currently is autonomous, nor will it be in the next 10 years. But what you just described is a very interesting thing. I'm not sure we have time to go into it. If you do want to say
Yeah,
something,
let's check.
go for it.
We'll check back in on that. Let's see how far we get and where GPT-5 is, and we'll circle back in 6 months and see what's.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people find out more about you and more about what you're working on?
The easiest way to get a hold of me is on Twitter, or I guess X, as they say. And my handle there is just my first name, last name, at Jonas Lammas. So that's the best way to get a hold of me.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Stuart Alsop III. Also, don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or iTunes for every weekly episode that I publish on Monday mornings. Hope you have a great day.